This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome into another episode of Tigers Radio Podcast here at MotorCityBengals.com. Chris Brown should be here shortly, as last week he was off for the week. Cooper is off this week and taking care of some personal stuff. And yeah, we'll be talking. There's quite a bit to get to, the projections. I'm going to question Dan and Chris on music trivia because baseball is just, I'm not sure. Some of the news today we'll get. I was going to say some of the back and forth comments is ridiculous. And we'll get
I shouldn't be laughing, but I am.
Well, Dan, it's just a bunch of posturing, but yeah, we'll definitely discuss that. Some housekeeping I wanted to get out of the way. First and foremost, if you have not, check out the link that we shared on Tiger Mind Report for the GoFundMe for Emily Walden, who has cancer, and we're trying to help her raise money for that. So if you go to our, we'll put the link note in our comment section, and you can find it on our podcast notes. And also, we're putting in the RotoWare. The Pitching Ninja was set up with a RotoWare shirt, so you can pre-order till January 23rd, and all proceeds help Emily's fight. So go to RotoWare.com and search for Emily's Fight Edition shirt. But yeah, getting back to, and it's also been a depressing week, you know, in terms of just the baseball stuff. Bob Saget died. I don't know if you're a big fan of Eric's 20's home video. No, I'm just joking. But of his work.
He was all about Full House.
He was a dad. He was America's dad.
And also very filthy, too.
Yeah, and I saw when I saw the Aristocrats originally, it just changed my opinion of him forever. And my favorite thing he ever did was direct Dirty Work, which is, I think, a very underrated movie in my part. One of my favorite movies out there, and you have the combination of Norm Macdonald, him directing. It's a great movie.
The Comedy Central roast of Bob Saget was a good one too.
Oh yeah, yeah, and that's
one of the best of those.
They had really a lot of comedians there. It was Greg Giraldo. He's fantastic as a roaster.
Yeah, he was in most of them. I miss him. He had two really fun albums.
Yeah, there's, you know, and a lot of times. Chris and I have talked about Mitch Hedberg quite a bit. And the reason why, I know he wasn't part of the road scene or anything, but when it comes to comedians that I found out about later, Mitch Hedberg was one of them, and Greg was too. But Greg had a certain way of just somehow always implementing coke and some sort of drug reference when he did it. It was so funny, but he really knew what just some of the digs were just spot on.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun. It was very sad. We've lost too many good comedians.
And in terms of even, too, I know the Betty White passed away, and there's a sign that when I was driving by my house, it was up last week. It was a digital sign that said, America's sweetheart, gone too soon. I paused for a moment, and not to sound cryptic, but being almost 100 is a good run.
Yeah, she should have gotten to 100. She should have had the 2 weeks.
Okay.
I think. It's like being like the last person to die, like in a war. It's like November 11, 1918, and it's 15 minutes before the armistice and you die. And you like gone through the whole war. Like she survived 2 years of COVID, almost 100 years. She should have gotten those last 2 weeks.
Yeah. You know what? You're absolutely right. It's just even like her. There was the Hot in Cleveland show that she did. But there's if anybody that has the Buzzard Network, which is a network that comes if you have a Samsung TV. It's one of those free things. They've been airing all these game show appearances. She was on with her last husband who passed away in 1979, and she was on Match Game 78, and it was a little before my time, but some of that stuff, some of those celebrities, I'm always trying to guess out who they are, but some of them, just some of the jokes she had on there, and just she was so funny and charming, but then you always see with Charles C. Riley, right corner, and it wasn't exactly Hollywood Squares, but Match Game, I don't know about you, Dan, if you watched a lot of Match Game back in your day, but
I've seen more Hollywood Squares.
Oh, did you ever see the combination when they tried to combine both of them? Like early, it was the 80s.
I did not.
Oh, it's terrible because it's an hour long and they switched both games back and forth, and I'm not sure what their logic was behind it.
Yeah, I like Hollywood Squares because it was always the celebrities you knew, and then you had no idea who some of them were. Oh, Joan Rivers. Yeah, I know who she is. Oh, there's Vincent Price. Okay, who the hell is Shadow Stevens?
Yeah, it's like that guy who may or may not been on Love Boat twice. Or, yeah, something like that.
Unfortunately, but
or there was I think the one I watched today with Betty White was when they had the Natalie from Facts of Life, and now Chris is joining us. Chris, thanks for that. Was my fault. I realized I didn't send you the link until just now.
No, it's all good.
Shadow Stevens is still alive, and he apparently was a radio host, voiceover actor, and television personality.
Shadow Stevens.
I remember him from various like Hollywood Squares things, I thought.
Yeah, that's how we got there.
Yeah.
Is he related to Fisher Stevens?
I know Fisher Stevens. Indian guy sometimes. A Koopa for some reason. And
yeah, I don't think that would fly. The Indian stuff, I don't think that would fly now.
Yeah, I don't think you could have a Fisher Stevens.
For the short circuit reboot that will inevitably come.
Okay, I remember who that guy is now. Yeah, that was.
He was also the hacker in Hackers, like the main bad guy.
He's a recurring character on The Blacklist, and he's a lot of fun.
There you go.
He's Red Reddington's occasional lawyer, Mark Gerard.
I've never actually watched The Blacklist, but I do. I did catch a lot of your pop culture references there at the end of the Tiger's Zips projection thing.
Well, I don't even remember what I said at this point.
You were calling their bullpen like a mix of Andy from The Office and Ted Mosby and Scrappy Doo and also, what's his name from Star Trek Voyager? Shoot.
Oh, Neelix.
Neelix, yeah. It was a nice, there's even a Ghostbusters 2 reference in there, which I enjoyed because I feel that movie's unfairly maligned, even if it didn't need to exist.
There's a lot of lot more bad Ghostbuster stuff than actual good Ghostbuster stuff.
Yeah, I remember that.
There's 1.5 movies that are good. That's like everything until recently, since you have TV. But yeah.
Well, I'm sharing for anybody watching us on YouTube. I'm sharing Neelix. It is important. He is one of the underrated characters in Deep Space. Deep Space Nine is one of the best Star Trek.
Was he in Deep Space Nine too, or was it just Voyager?
Well, he was Voyager. I thought he was on. I'm sorry.
He was just Voyager.
Voyager. I'm sorry. Deep Space Nine is one of my favorite. He was.
Yeah. Voyager. Deep Space Nine was awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, that is Neelix, and he loved. I remember when he first got picked up on the planet, where he was just indulging in baths and stuff like that. So that's why I remember him the most. And other episodes, of course, but
he was a very ingratiating character, and it was very unnerving. I'm waiting for them to have him go onto a planet and collect Leola root or whatever he did, and then just kind of just fly off. What's he gonna do?
He's got to return to his planet now.
No, he doesn't get to return to his planet. He just lives wherever they leave him.
Yeah, he's a poochie.
But no, speaking of old TV, by the way, I just got this week. In addition to that, Night Court is coming back, and so is.
Oh, dude. Really?
Yeah, Night Court's coming back, and it's going to be the daughter of the judge, Judge Harry.
So, like in real life?
She was on Big Bang Theory, the Hall or this damn CBS shows that all blend together. She was the blonde, the other one.
Listen, I don't know.
Yeah, anyway, she's going to be the judge.
I think John Larroquette and Richard Muller.
See, this is any better.
I think they're the only two people who are still remaining, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was just about to say, there's been a lot of deaths. There was a lot of death on Night Court, even when it was on. The first couple of bailiffs died, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they were also like 80 at the time. And that was like 85 years ago, so.
Yeah, constantly smoking. But yeah, so who's left? Marsha Warfield?
Yeah, Marsha Warfield, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, she had one of the first people to try to do a talk show, the crossover talk shows, and it failed miserably.
Yeah, she's 67.
I have it open now. It's weird. I have no memory of the Public Defenders before Marky Post.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah.
I guess we remember Night Court in its final form, but yeah, there were people before her, weren't there?
I think it was two, right? Two?
Yeah. Well, there was one in the pilot episode only, one who was Liz Williams in season one, and one who was Billy Young in season two. And I have zero memory of this.
Oh, yeah, and Richard Mole's still alive.
Yeah, I just remember later seasons.
Yeah.
And I remember those late episodes more clearly. John Larroquette, when the singing telegram guy came because he tried to join the army or something, and he did. And then he crashed in Alaska, and the singing telegram, the United States Army is very sad to say, Captain Fielding's plane went down north of Hudson Bay.
No, I remember that they always seem to find an excuse to have to get through like a record number of cases in one night, and they're like Wile E. Coyote would show up and stuff like that. I dug that as a kid.
I think there's this information in my brain has probably pushed out information like anniversaries and people's birthdays.
You could look that up. You can write it down.
I still remember the final episode of Quantum Leap like it was yesterday, and they're talking about
I'm mad. They didn't give him a good ending, even in like the TV movies. It's like he soon never returned home.
Yeah,
that was the bar, wasn't he? At the bar. Yeah.
They had, I forgot the actor's name that was in. He's in a lot of little different things. The bartender, I forgot the guy's name, but
I don't remember.
Yeah, it's the guy. He was in Time Cop. He was the chief in Time Cop.
I have little recollection of Time Cop other than that.
I've never seen Time Cop. Well, is Jean Van Damme or Jean Claude Van Damme in that?
Yeah.
All right.
Either way, the ending with the coal miners, I didn't understand. As a kid, even now, I didn't understand. That's such a great show. It ended logically. They were going to say a few shows that didn't jump the shark, but either way, the ending was bad. But
let him go home. It's not like it's historical and it has to match reality. It's not like like a show about Lincoln where at the end you have to kill him. You can't have like the ending where Lincoln's just okay. You can't do that. It's a show about Lincoln, but fiction, just give him a good ending.
Yeah, that's a good point. I
don't know. Speaking of endings, by the way, this lockout doesn't seem any closer to the ending. Way into that.
Hey, there you go. Solid. Nicely done.
Thank you. And
you made a quantum leap there.
Before we get to Zip Productions, we also got a lot of questions tonight, too, from the audience. So good to see the audience back at it. Today it came out today. Essentially, the reporters were, one side presenting the owner saying that, John Heyman, let's just face it, works for the network, so he's do what he's got to do. And by the way, speaking of that, good for Kevin Rosenthal, by the way, to see what I couldn't believe that he got let go because of what he said. It was just ridiculous. But anyway, I don't get too sidetracked. But yeah, they're no closer than what they were before. And the owners are set fast on their free agent requirement. Was it 6 years, Chris?
Yeah, I believe so. This 6 years before free agency, they seem to be willing to budge a little bit in terms of arbitration when arbitration starts, or at least beginning salaries. But yeah, I don't think they want to change on that at all. My general perception, and I don't know if Dan agrees with this, but I'm not much of a poker player, but it feels like the owners are sitting there at the table with a higher stack, if you will, or I don't know what you call that. And they're just content to.
Yeah, they're happy. Like the blinds are coming and they don't really care as much as the other side.
Yeah, they feel like they can last longer just doing that. So they're going to sit and bully the players and they don't think the players will pack up and walk away.
I think in the end, it's going to be really hard for the players to get a reduction in free agent service time. I can't see a scenario in which that happens. Maybe I'm just being pessimistic from the point of view of the players, but I can't see in the end them getting 5 years. I think they can get a much better minimum salary than was offered, because what they offered, the 600,000, it's not even keeping up with inflation from the last offer. It's not even an offer. I think you start talking like $1 million as a minimum salary, and then some kind of alteration with Super 2 or eliminating Super 2 advancing Super 2 to cover more players. I think those kinds of things are doable. The DH offer isn't really an offer because I think both sides want it in the end. You can't really offer something that you probably want to. Teams don't actually want their pitchers hitting. They prefer them not hitting or swinging a bat, running on the base pass if that happens. Teams don't want that. I think you do need to figure out some kind of compensatory scheme for the service time manipulation. The idea that I've pitched in the past is all that extra time, say, a player makes it to free agency with 6 years, 130 days of service time. That's two-thirds of a season, and like the team has to provide two-thirds times something, like maybe the first year of their next contract or that percentage of half of the next year of their contract, but some kind of compensatory scheme to repay them so that Chris Bryant would get something for losing what's essentially an entire year. But I don't think they're going to get the 5 years.
Yeah, and I guess you're our first Fangraphs guest since, I don't remember what offer that was or if it was ever actually real, but they talked about a month and a half ago about potentially using F4.
That was weird.
Yeah, I wonder how that felt at the Fangraphs location.
Yeah, as far as I know, no one ever at the plant. None of the owners actually asked us about that beforehand, like saying, I don't know. I don't think it was meant to be taken seriously. I think it was just a shooting the shit moment. I do think actually in the end there will be a deal. This is, I think, the feeling out process. I don't think there was ever a chance of them coming close to an agreement today. It's just they haven't talked in a month. And it was, let's get situated where we are. Hopefully the players will send a response back fairly quickly. That I consider it a good sign that nobody flipped over a table in anger today. That's a win by itself.
No arson. That's always a good sign too, yeah. They had another thing about top 150 prospects. Did you catch
it? Yeah, it was just this convoluted scheme. I think you want to prevent salary manipulation, but I don't think you want to do it by weird scheme that's especially has to rely on things like war and other things. If baseball wants to pay everybody by their Zips projection, okay, but I do want 1% off the top of the, as like my VIG.
Yeah, I would. Absolutely.
Reactions. Like, okay, sure. I don't know how ethical it is. You want to use... You have a bad idea that you all agree on? Sure. But I do need a taste, just a little taste. I'm not greedy.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, that was not that anybody would ever like manipulate things, but basing it on something like publicly available seems odd to me. But I don't know. Yeah, I do wonder where they'll eventually land. But I tend to agree with you, Dan, that I don't think, as much as the players want to get that free agency moved up, I don't see the owner's budget on that, at least in any real way.
No. Now, if they had adopted four, can you imagine the fighting every time we like tinker with the formula?
I know, like, oh, it turns out all the defense was wrong.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, then like,
there's a class action suit.
Yeah. Corey Seager shows up at Dave Appleman's house banging on the door. Who gets Appleman? This cost me $8 million.
Josh Allen, just Josh Allen's just gonna go on a tour, like, told you guys.
Yeah.
Sights on the trouble.
Yeah. Adam Wainwright.
But. Oh, man. No, but even some of the other things that came out today that were interesting, at least in a sense of the award draft picks to teams that don't manipulate service time. So that the talk about tweaks to the draft lottery, which I'm interested to see more about that. And another part of why I think perhaps the season may start on time if spring training is maybe late too, is because they know the more this is carrying on, the more it's a no-win situation for both sides. And Tony Clark right now, the head of the Player Association, they are going to bunker down because they have to, because the owners are just, they're not going to give in, as Chris and I get that joke there.
Jeffrey Figer law commercials.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Figer, whose brother was in what group?
He was in the Knack. The Knack from, we found the Knack.
Yeah, My Sharona?
Yeah, My Sharona, yeah. So he actually dated a woman named Sharona, by the way, fun fact.
Oh, there you go. Yeah,
so anyway.
You don't really need a long spring training. MLBPA has already talked with DBAT to get facilities for players to use. Mm-hmm. It's not like they have to be me. They're not going to sit at home eating tacos. They can still actually work out, prepare for the season. I personally think spring training is too long as it is anyway. It starts in mid-February and games don't start until the start of April, end of March.
I've always considered that to be part of almost like a deal they have with the cities. Yeah, we promised we'd be down there for 6 weeks so you guys can do your tourism stuff or whatever. But I'm trying to, how long was the post pandemic, you know, 2020? I don't remember how long that second spring training was.
It was a month, I believe.
Yeah. And that felt fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember when they opened up what date did Sotomayor stop the 94 strike?
Oh,
I'm looking at it.
Question.
The strike ended on March 28th, 1995.
Gotcha.
And it was a shortened season. What date did they start? Oh. Yeah, I didn't know we were going to get into this, so I wasn't really prepared
for it.
1995?
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, that was the...
April 25th. So they did that like in 3.5 weeks or 4 weeks. So I think you can, as long as you get a deal by March 1st, I think you can avoid losing games.
Yeah, I mean, that stands to reason. I think
some people say February 1st, like, you don't need it that quick. They don't need that much time.
Yeah, especially when The only thing that they're talking about is maybe free agency. But again, I think that deals would probably be done pretty quickly if some were already discussed beforehand.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that hard. It's not like you're like going house shopping who these people are. It's like, how are you supposed to do it? Yeah. Who are these? Is Carlos Correa a baseball player? Where do we find out this information? I think you could settle it pretty quickly if you had to.
Yeah, and I suspect strongly that teams are still doing tons of homework on free agency and maybe even contacting them surreptitiously.
Yeah, we're not even allowed to think about it.
I know. They're passing notes under doors and things like that. But yeah, I don't think the business side of this has gone, you know, completely off the rails.
What do you think if we signed Barlos Berea? To Well, if this theoretical player,
yes,
it sounds like he wants $200 million.
No, and it's, I think that it's just, there's some things are going to happen really quickly, and then before baseball starts, and then we're just going to pretend this never happened. But so we're looking at the 2022 Tigers zip projections, and you have the Kansas City Royals one too that just came out, I believe, this week. Or no, you have the Nationals that came out, and then Royals not too far back. And the Tigers, in terms of some of the names you mentioned from the past, I cracked up a little bit. The Steven Moyas.
Derek Hill, yeah.
Yeah, and the Christian Stewart reference. But so you were saying the offense caught you by surprise a little bit in terms for this year. How did last season play out to you in terms of projections? There was any kind of big surprises from last year?
The offense was better than the Zips expected in the season. Badu, I think, is the most obvious example of that. And Zips was actually pretty optimistic that he'll repeat his season more than I was surprised. It was a better projection than I expected. I thought there'd be more regression, but Zips liked his Statcast data, thought it was consistent with how he hit. I think what kind of surprised me going into this offseason is I was not down on the Tigers, but I didn't really see them doing like much better than their 77-85 record, which I thought was above their head for 2021. But the more I looked at their stats and thought about it, thought about some of the guys who are very close to the majors, and I turned out, it doesn't happen often, I liked the team a lot more after writing the piece. I just thought, oh, they're better than I thought. And I'm more positive about the Tigers than I was at the start.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was, and you mentioned it in that piece about, you're talking about Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson. They're both projected for close to 3 WAR. And you mentioned, you referenced your Seattle rundown too, because Julio Rodriguez is also projected for 3 WAR, and you're showing how rare that is to Zips. So I was curious, and I went through all of them. I think you've got 26 of them up now, maybe 25.
26. I have 4 more teams to do. Braves, Brewers, Rangers, and someone else. I forget. I should know. Marlins.
There you go.
I didn't do Marlins. It feels like I have to do Marlins.
Yeah, I didn't see them when I was, I just, you could probably figure out a way to just pull this right up, but I went through and looked at every player that I could find who hasn't made the majors yet, who has had a WAR projection at Zips of 1.0 or better. And I went through earlier.
Hear you guys.
Uh-oh. You say you can't hear me?
Oh, now I can.
Sorry, maybe I was leaning down, but what I was saying is, as I went through all the projections and found all the guys who are all players who haven't made their major league debut yet, who were projected for at least 1 WAR. Let's see how many. There was about 60 total, I think, so far. But really only, 10 for projected for 2 WAR. And the Tigers have 2 of them. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, both Green and Torkelson, they get really solid projections. Almost 3 wins.
Yeah.
They're way up there. I haven't actually been tracking the rookies, so it's actually interesting.
Yeah, I didn't. It was kind of the way I split it. There's still plenty of other rookies who, you know, still have rookie eligibility that were decent. But I was just, it just made me wonder how often the Zips will project that for somebody who's never actually reached the majors. And yeah, I think even 1.5, you get down to about 20, 21 guys. And Kreidler fits in there too. So the Tigers have 3 guys who could theoretically, the Zips put up 1.5 wins. So that.
Yeah, but the first two, I think, are the big ones. And
yeah.
And the boost that they can provide that offense is just amazing. The Royals have a couple guys who look like they're close to the majors, but I don't think they're going to integrate them as well as the Tigers will. I think the Royals will continue to royal.
Yeah, I mean, they were also pretty high up there with a couple. They had 3 pretty quality guys. The one, it surprised me, Cleveland had 6 players, all like 1.5 wins projected that hadn't made their debuts yet. So I was like, oh boy, here comes the Cleveland again. But yeah, it's fun to play around with this. It's nice. It's nice to have a projection system, that's for sure.
When we were talking about fictional players, I opened up an old game for the Nintendo called Roger Clemens MVP Baseball.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have the license for the teams. It doesn't have the license for the players. And the thing about it is they change the names of the players to not be the real ones, but you could tell
what
they were. Like Frank Tanana's in the game as Frenana. There's Billick Werrell, which is clearly Walt Terrell. Tankman, Letterman, I don't know who that is. Gabs.
No, that's Mike Henneman.
Oh, okay. I forgot about him. I'm looking at the roster. And the starting lineup is Phipps. Oh, there we go.
Furpo Marbury. What?
Phipps. That's Tony Phillips. Got Lloyd B. Mel.
Yeah.
Fieldman. Inkervac. And here's my favorite, Bambi. Because it's Rob Deere. I assume this is Fryman. There's just Frin. Coyle Lilt has to be Milt Kyler.
Yeah.
And then
that sounds like that's the 91 team, I think. The one that we, Relio and I did a dice baseball game, and I was the 91 Tigers a couple weeks ago. That was my squad.
Good stuff. So that was the random thing I was thinking of, which is completely off top. It is baseballs, and it's not like Hollywood Squares like we were talking. So
yeah.
Yeah, anytime you can mention Roger Clemens MVP baseball, that's...
That was a fun game.
Yeah,
because that was it was game. Neat because it was a game, when you played a season, you didn't play a season. They started you off in the midst of the pennant race. So it's like, we're just going to start you off in the divisional race. And everything was first person, and people had trouble with that because the camera would shift so rapidly. It wasn't as good a game as Baseball Stars, but it was a pretty good game.
Yeah, I'm trying to... Oh, there. Yeah, they got player name humor. Daryl Strawberry was Raspberry. Steve Sachs is Clarinet. Very fun. Oh, Lenny Dykstra is Nails.
Yeah.
Not bad.
These have nothing to do with the real players, of course. We don't have a license.
Wait a minute. Tim Raines is Snows. I'm wondering.
I wonder if that's a cocaine reference.
I don't know if that is or if they're just playing with the weather. But anyway. But
a lot of playing around with rights back then that there wouldn't be nowadays. There was a beat-em-up arcade game in Japan called Ninja Baseball Batman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have it on an emulator of mine.
Yeah, I play that on MAME once in a while. It's a lot of fun. But you can play as Ryan Sandberg, Daryl Strawberry, Roger Clemens, or Jose Canseco. But it isn't them. It's like ninja robots that look like them.
Well, yeah, I recall from Street Fighter, wasn't one of the characters basically based on Mike Tyson? He was in the original M. Bison, but they changed his name. They switched names. Yeah.
I got a little worried. Mike Tyson was wealthy at the time, and also you probably didn't want to piss off Mike Tyson too much.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that, just him going through, and or even like he was in Super Street Fighter 2, Bing Long is essentially Bruce Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with the dragon, or his leg can go on fire, but he was basically a knockoff version of that. But get back in.
Tekken got away with that, too. They had a Jackie Chan and Bruce Lee. That was very obvious.
Yeah, that drunk, it was the guy with the drunken style, correct?
Yeah, Lei.
Lei, yeah. That's a... I haven't played Tekken in a long time. That's a good game. Getting back to it, Chris, there was the one thing I wanted to ask you, Chris, in terms of some of the projection-wise. The one, or in terms of the starters, we look at Mize at 2.3 and Scooble 2.0, and that is Manny at 1.3, Chris. The reason why I'm asking about these three is that they're the young part of the rotation, and it just seems like the Tigers, that's quite a bit to have on there. I mean, two WAR is good. Don't get me wrong. Or is it the projection to have that? But it still shows that the lack of the rotation. Alexander at 0.3.
Those are with the Fangraphs depth chart playing time. So
yeah.
The back ones will always have fewer innings. Like Alexander, not that many more. I think it's a lot of progress. If you ask me, is this team going to contend for a wild card in 2022? I'd probably still say no. But they've gotten to the point where they're interesting. They're like the White Sox in about 2019 or so, where they're going to be interesting soon, but maybe not right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, we've discussed that a lot, where they are in the rebuild, if you will, or the return to contention. I did think you pointed out in your write-up that they probably need to add another starter. certainly doesn't help that Turnbull's gone and or injured and Matthew Boyd is gone. And then you point out that the bullpen looks like a disaster.
Yeah, Zips was not big on the bullpen.
Yeah, which is it's interesting because they seem to have a few guys who popped over the toward the end of the season, like guys who seem to have made, like Alex Lang seemed to make real progress. But I don't know. Do you find that Zips does a decent job? It's your
like you can look at Gregory Soto and he picked really well at times, like a lot of the he was pretty dominating. But Zips also sees a guy who walked more than five batters a game, and that's a very thin line that goes into trouble. And relievers like that who have walk rates in that kind of danger zone, they're very risky.
Yeah, and it seems to be relievers in general are so hard to predict. But yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right there. Where I was looking at relievers, who was it? Carlos Marmol used to post ridiculous like walk rates and still managed to succeed, and then they would completely fall apart. It's like guys like that you can't really trust.
Yeah, one of the amazing things about Mariano Rivera wasn't just that he was a great reliever, because he was. But it wasn't like he put up otherworldly numbers in any given season that other relievers couldn't. What made him special was that he did it for 15 years or more than that. And I think that he left before he was done. I think he could have come back another 3 or 4 years and kept throwing that cutter because he was fine his final.
Yeah, it's funny thinking about, I always view him and David Ortiz as having all these epic battles, and they both had these really strong final seasons where they could have probably easily could justified coming back. When there's something to be said for guys who walk away when they're still good.
Yeah, and in Mariano Rivera's case, he was already going to be in the Hall of Fame. He already had lots of World Series rings. He was the all-time saves leader. It wasn't like he was going to be all-timer than he was, all-time year. Yeah. I guess from his standpoint, is there anything more to really accomplish?
Yeah, and at that point, too, in terms of his just stuff, you're right. He still had it in. Maybe it's just a way to say, you know what, I'm going on top, and you really probably consider the Hall of Fame vote at that point too, because has he got in the Hall of Fame? I can't remember.
Unanimous?
Unanimous. Yeah.
He's the first unanimous.
That's right. And I was drawing a blank there for a second, but I think the reason why I was drawing a blank is because I was looking at some of the comps on some of the players, and it's funny, there's three ex-Tigers here, but I'm gonna challenge you guys both on what ex-Tigers. The first one is Candelario, which is Travis Fryman, so that's easy. But what about the next couple of them? And can you guess any of them being former Tigers?
We already actually mentioned one of them.
Yes, we did.
Today, we mentioned Lloyd Mosby already.
Yeah, Lloyd Mosby, okay. And then there's one more. There's a couple more there. So I'm going to ask Chris here. What about, there's one that stands out in the top
five.
Boy,
I don't. In the top five?
Oh, I know, but I won't say it.
Yeah.
Is it Junior Felix?
Yeah, there you go. Nice.
We're still talking hitters. Okay. I was looking
at hitters. Oh, no, yeah.
There's a very obvious one in the top five. I was like, got to look down.
Felix was, again, Sparky Anderson loved ex-Blue Jays for some strange reason. He was the Blue Jays. Then he spent his last season in the majors with the Tigers before he retired or disappeared. So then Jonathan Scope was the other Frank Thomas.
Scott Livingstone's there. He was
the Tiger. Scott Livingstone's there. Bob Melvin's there, former Tiger catcher.
It's always the number one comp, but I assume that there are times where like things might be close enough that you might search for somebody who is.
Oh, never. I would never disturb the sanctity of the number one comp.
Yes, very good.
Even when, as long as people think I do, because some years ago, Byron Buxton, his top comp was Carlos Gomez. And people thought I picked that like one just to
mess with Twins.
Yeah, just to mess with Twins fans. But like, no, I swear. I like took like a screenshot of it. Like, this is
nice.
Top comp. It's always the top comp. And it's what amuses me sometimes is like fringe players. There's always like a few players who are so averagely mediocre that they show up on a lot of comp lists. Chad Mueller is like somewhere on the comp list of every AAA fringe catcher in their early 30s. They all have Chad Mueller somewhere. consistently mediocre across the board. Sorry, Chad.
My favorite comp, though, is you have for Eduardo Rodriguez, and that's the Candyman, the original Candyman, John Candelaria, who did throw one no-hitter, but that was more known as a reliever. He pitched all over after that, but just that cracked me up because I always just think of his interviews where he looked like he was just fresh off. He partied up a little bit in those pirate hats, but Yeah, I have them up on the screen. The Casey Mize one for Tiger fans, by the way, is 30-game winner Danny McClain. So that could be a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, no. I think Zips doesn't take a personality into account, hopefully.
Good.
I don't know how it could. Maybe it does one of those letter types, eidetic or whatever you call them, where, hey, I'm an RCBM.
The Jeff Francis one for Tarek Skubal, I'm sure some Tiger fans are like, what? What about Randy Johns? Jeff Francis was so tossing. Oh.
Yeah.
Tim Cruz, that's a good one, too. I haven't heard that name in a long time. Yeah, I felt like every time you got baseball cards, Tim Cruz was like a double every time. Like, yeah, two Tim Cruz every time you got baseball cards.
Yeah, Tim Cruz is a sad story because he was on that boat that crashed that killed Steve Olin.
Cleveland?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, I did.
Him and Olin were killed and drunk and speeding. And
yeah,
Bobby Ojeda, I think he missed the whole season or most of the season and really injured himself badly and was trying to recover. That was sad. That was devastating.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a big bummer. I don't know. I guess there's always a tragedy or two in baseball. But yeah, I remember that one being big. I remember who was the pilot? The New York Yankees pitcher who crashed into a building. No, not the Grant. It was like in the early 2000s.
Oh, God.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I remember Bison Daly, the former Piston.
Oh, geez. It just disappeared.
Died at sea, yeah. The Cruz reference. I feel like such
Corey Lytle. Corey Lytle.
Corey Lytle, yeah.
The Cruz reference, I feel like such a turd about it, but I honestly I remember.
Yeah, I didn't mean to imply anything.
Oh no! Oh, I know.
Actually, that's what he's that he.
Yeah,
that
no,
guy.
No, you're absolutely right. I remember that being a big thing on ESPN for like 3 days too. When I used to watch SportsCenter, that was a kind of a daily thing. We got your news, yeah. But no,
and I feel bad because I've been on a boat and been drinking and think, and I'm still thinking about that, and then I just think, okay, let's just drive slowly. Let's just go slow.
Yeah,
and I feel bad about that, like. I'm not being that much more careful, like when I've been on a boat and gone drinking.
There's,
yeah.
Joey Wentz, by the way, gets paired to the former Tiger Bobby C.
I'd take that.
Yeah, that's not, I like that. And there's also, there's the, where was the one I giggled at a little bit? Oh, Mitch Williams to Gregory Soto, which kind of makes sense, actually, if you think about it.
Yeah, lefty, wild.
Now, the weird thing about Joey Wentz is, how is he still just 24? It's like he has been around forever.
Yeah, was he the 2015 draft class, or was he the same draft class as Matt Manning? Was that 2016?
I think he was 2016. I'm not sure.
So
he was drafted out of high school, wasn't he?
Yeah. I remember he was in Kansas. He was like a first baseman, too. And then he started throwing harder, and we're like, wait a minute, what about a pitcher? Let me see. I'm looking.
Yeah, but it just feels like he's been talked about for so long. It's like he's still just 24. I had that feeling when Bubba Starling announced his retirement recently. I'm like, oh, he's still around. Is he like 50 now? He's like still in his 20s. I'm like, how did that happen? I thought he was drafted like in the 80s.
We last week or the week before, we talked about Rick Porcello, who's been around since I was a child, and he's only 33.
Yeah, John Garland was another one like that. He came up at age 20,
mm-hmm.
And then he lasted forever. And he only turned 40 not too long ago. He's a year younger than me, so he could have pitched another decade, essentially, than when he actually retired.
Yeah, and he was a very similar pitcher and career to Porcello, actually, I think. Although Porcello won a Cy Young for some reason.
Has Porcello officially retired, or is he?
I don't think so. I think he just disappeared. He's
got money.
He's probably got long hair and a beard and is in Tibet.
Making some wise investments. We got in that cryptocurrency. Who knows? But he hasn't. There's been no talk. Last time, did he throw last year for cold teams, Chris?
I don't remember. I
would have sworn he did.
It's possible. So I didn't think he was injured or done or anything, but
yeah. I just remember him being a free agent and just never hearing about him again.
Yeah. That's basically what happened. And we talked about last week, his underlying numbers were pretty good in 2020. He ERA was ugly, but, and that was it.
So I did want to, before we get to our.
Yeah, he's his agent. I could probably just ask.
Yeah, that's true. Let's see.
I don't know why he does Excel Sports Management. I actually know people there, so I should actually ask them.
Yeah.
A lot of times I always forget that that I do have the ability to call agents and teams and they will get back to me. But I always forget to actually use that.
Yeah, that's a good, that's not a bad point. Well, great Pretty Ricky?
With great power comes great responsibility.
There you go.
I mostly just mess around on Twitter. I don't use any of my access all that useful.
Walter in our chat made a clean break for it.
We were discussing Rivera, and I always bring back Justin Verlander. Like, certain players, they reach a point that's good enough for them and they don't need to play anymore. I wonder why Verlander wants to come back. I think because he's crazy and wants to, you know, break all sorts of records that he can. And other people are like, yeah, that's good, I'm done.
It really depends on the player, because I think a lot of fans never really quite get it, but a lot of players love baseball. Mm-hmm. Like Ricky Henderson, he loved playing baseball. And he'd still, if a team called him up now and said, do you want to come to spring training and try out for the team? He'd be right there. But a lot of players play baseball because they're good at it and get paid for it. Mm-hmm. There's always players who just aren't as into baseball. And sometimes fans get shocked about that. Like, how can he not love baseball? Like, Adam Dunn was not huge into baseball. He wanted to spend the offseason doing anything but baseball. He wanted to go fishing and hunting, and that's what Adam Dunn wanted to do. So it's not surprising that he walked away fairly early, because it's like he had enough money to retire. He doesn't love what he does the way some other players do. Like Votto loves it a lot more than Adam Dunn ever did. So there's quite a variance from player to player.
Yeah, and it's one thing, like, it's not just playing in the games. I'm sure some people would be like, yeah, if I could just go play, but you're still, you got to get at the park at 2 p.m. and you're staying till 11, and it's there's more to it.
Yeah, you're away from your family half the year, you're working out constantly, you're watching your diet in the off season, you're not saying anything to get yourself suspended on Twitter or anything.
Yeah.
Some players are better than that others.
Or the user platform like John Smoltz does and complains about the game every 5 seconds when he's on the broadcast. Either or, how you ever want to see that fit.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? So before we get to the listener questions, I did have a couple of questions for you guys.
Uh-oh.
So I'm holding up in my hand is Music IQ, which is a game I got in Bay City. And Dan, your music knowledge is pretty, I would say,
pop. Average.
Average? Oh, okay.
I think average. It depends on the era we're talking about. I was born in 1978, so if the questions are 90s stuff, there's a good chance I'll know it. I do tend to have rather hipstery indie rock tastes, so you ask something about like the New Pornographers or something, or Belle and Sebastian, I probably know that. But if you ask about something now or something that's hip-hop, I will not know it at all.
By the way, new Pavement dropped today. Pavement dropped a new single today.
Oh.
So... anybody in the
that is actually interesting. No, I'm
first song. Let me say it, first song in 15 years.
I did not know that was a possibility, but again, I tend to fall behind on music releases these days, and I just got bit by a cat.
All right, so
name it my new album.
So we're gonna play a quick. I'm just gonna ask you guys each three questions.
I'm gonna be really bad at this.
So. I'm going to try to see if I can play it up to Chris's power suits, but...
No, that's fine.
All right. So I'm going to go with the first... This was a softball question. Or just a really...
Jenny Fetch.
Do we have like a buzzer or is it... Or
both of us are just for one... You're going to ask one at a time.
I'm going to ask one at a time and whoever gets it, just gets it.
Oh, okay. I got you.
All right. So turn down the music a little bit. Who was Ziggy Stardust?
Oh.
Was that David Bowie? Oh,
yeah, that's right there.
That was his character with the star.
Yeah, I didn't
have a...
He played the guitar.
I mean, Dan knew that. I just...
You were quicker on the draw, Chris?
I don't know. He said O first, and then I cut him off.
Yeah, but I mean, you can... Ziggy played guitar. Damn good with Weird and Gilly and the Spiders from Mars.
I give him that point because I couldn't do any of that.
But murdered too far. Became the special man. That's Ziggy's brand.
That's going on Twitter as the clip for this episode.
The worst clip ever in a stream was when I was doing a stream for Fangraphs, and one of my cats was on my windowsill, and a bee got in.
Oh, no.
And he knocked down the bee, and he picked up the bee in his mouth to bring it to me.
Oh no!
And you just hear me on the. He's like, "Stop! Don't bring it to me." He tried to bring me like this half dead bee, and you just hear me like hitting the bee with like a shoe.
The bee attack. Killer bees.
Killer bees.
I'm not allergic. I just don't want to get stung by it.
Yeah.
Nobody. My office.
All right. Some of these questions are very hard, but all right. I'll give you. Okay. Here's question number two. Play the music here. What inspired Sting to write Roxanne? I get there's multiple choices. Do you guys want me to spill them out?
Is it the Greek myth, or that seems a little that's pretentious enough for Sting, depending on when you got him?
I was gonna go with Cyrano de Bergerac or something like that.
It was about a prostitute.
Oh, okay.
Wait, is that was the answer?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, was it? Is it a red light? Was it like a reference to Amsterdam?
Yeah,
or
yeah, or, no, you have to turn on the red light district being prostitute.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
So, all right. Third question, and then we got two more to go after this. Just two more to go after this.
All right.
This one's a multiple choice one. So how much did a 3-day pass to Woodstock cost in 1969? $10, $18, or $25?
I'll say $10.
Chris?
That would have been my guess too.
It was actually $18.
How dare they?
Yeah, there's inflation for you. Oops. All right. Let me see. Let's skip around here. Another one. So here's another multiple choice question. This is a good one. What is the origin of the term funk? The opposite of blues? The slang funky meaning smelly? The slang funky meaning sexy?
I don't think they would. I think it's more likely to be sexy than smelly. I don't think you would. I think you naturally make it. And you talk about stank and everything after, but I don't think it would be the source of it. I think that would come like later. If you're trying to sell people on the concept of funk.
Yeah, I don't know. That's probably what I would choose, but for fun, I'll go with the opposite of blues.
It was actually it was smelly. It was smelly.
Oh, it was smelly. Okay.
Why? What? This music stinks. What? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't.
Oh, I believe you. I'm just surprised.
Yeah,
I wasn't there for the foundations of funk. Again, I was born in 78. I don't know my funk very well.
No, and I was stunned by the question, the answer myself. That's why I kind of gave it I gave a funky look anyway. All right, but
very interesting.
All right, so this one, this one should be an easy one. What sports brand signed a sponsorship deal with the rap group Run DMC, the first of its kind?
Adidas?
Yep.
Yeah.
Adidas. All right, let's see here. Okay. Adidas, okay. All right, here, you know what? Listen, okay, we'll end on this one, I promise, this last one, okay?
All right.
All right, Chris, this is Chris and Dan, I think Dan will get this. To hip-hop fans, what were the 1990s? The Glorious 10, the Immortals, the Golden Age?
I don't know if it'd be, I guess it would be the Golden Age.
Yeah.
You had all those guys before they were, before lots of killings, maybe? Which of them, not to be gauche, but.
No, it's interesting. I've never.
Guys who were like big now, they're like ex-rappers, they all came from the 90s, especially like the early 90s. Maybe there's some 80s in there too, but I would say Golden Age.
Yeah, I've never heard the other two references. I've always heard the Golden Age of rap was like from 88 to 94 or whatever, but I guess they could probably stretch it out.
Yeah, you were correct. You guys were both correct. It was
the Golden Age.
The Immortals do sound a little too comic booky, but
I've never heard.
Yeah, the Glorious 10.
Yeah.
And Walter brings up a good point too. All the producers that were, you had Dr. Dre, you also had, you know what's funny is even Pharrell, a young Pharrell was a pretty good producer. He did Rump Shaker.
He was with the, was he with the Trackmasters?
I think he was, yeah.
He was with the Neptunes. Yeah, I don't know. No, but yeah, like you had Rick Rubin in the 80s and the 90s. Huffy was around, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, Jay's.
DJ Premier.
Jay Dilla too. As well.
Dilla.
Yeah, there's plenty of examples of that. All right, so I just want to break up the baseball talk.
All right.
Because we can. Well, it's the offseason, and
there's not much happening.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
And if we just talk about projections for an hour, people will get bored. I'll get bored.
We can talk about what's happening, the show.
Oh, the show with Roger and and rerun?
Oh. Yeah, I was a little too young to it. I didn't really see that many reruns of it, so I was culturally aware of it.
Yeah, that's the same way I was, too. I don't remember.
I remember 80s shows. Like, you could give me an 80s show. And, you know, I could sing that. Show me that smile again.
Oh, show me that smile.
Because you're just gonna keep going, huh?
You have to have the denouement of the song.
Of course, my brother's favorite show of all time of the 80s is Perfect Strangers, because it was so ridiculous.
Standing tall on the wings,
yeah,
of our dreams.
And also, it launched Family Matters because the
elevator lady,
yeah,
Harriet Winslow.
Yeah, and then of course you have the infamous. The girl, the younger sister, went upstairs and never came back, and find out she was in porno later.
Wait, what?
Yeah, the younger sister went upstairs and never came back down.
In what show? In Perfect Strangers? Wait, no. Family Matters.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Have you ever seen the Key and Peele Urkel sketch?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's so great.
Yeah.
I was watching that when my mom was visiting this one time. I was there and she was just in my kitchen, and she comes out and she sees me watching this, and she just sees the actor pretending to be Reginald L. Johnson holding the gun. It's like, oh, it's not.
Like, here's the jive.
Go on, mom.
But yeah, we have listener questions, right, Chris?
Yeah, we got at least three. I haven't checked Twitter since. We got some good ones. And one of them we touched on already. It was from Field Diamond. He said, will Akil Baddoo buck a sophomore slump, assuming we have baseball back?
I'll say yes, because Zips liked him, so I'll just go with Zip said there. Then if it's wrong, I can blame the computer.
I think he'll be okay. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, it's a 264, 335, 451 projection, 113 OPS plus. And that's, I think he was like a 113.
He was. That's exactly what he did this year. Yeah. And that,
it's basically saying he's going to repeat, but it looks like a little less power, but a little more walks.
Yeah, yeah, it looks like he's 2.3 WAR is what I see there, and he had 1.9 this year. So it's like a
that's fine. It's from a player that it wasn't expected of, and he's fine. So don't complain.
Yeah, and it's I want to follow up on that, because I find someone like him to be fascinating. Just to curious how that would affect a projection system, because nobody would have predicted what he did last year, and Zips had him for a 63 OPS plus and a negative 1.1 WAR. And I think that's totally justifiable for a guy who had 30 games in high A.
Yeah, he had 30 games in high A, and he didn't even play well in high A.
Yeah.
He was pretty awful. It was one of the more surprising. It's like, are you powered by COVID, dude?
Yeah, so I've been fascinated by it for a while. And basically the only one thing that you could point to from his minor league stats, at least the publicly available ones, was like he had decent walk rate. And I guess there was a little bit of power and speed there, but it wasn't like he was walking at a 30% ridiculous rate or anything like that. But from watching him all year, it quickly became pretty obvious that he had an outstanding idea of the strike zone. Like, he's not necessarily like Juan Soto or anything like that, but he ended the year making really good swing decisions for the most part. I think he left the zone under 28% of the time, which kind of puts him in the same range as like Justin Turner and Paul Goldschmidt and Jose Ramirez.
Fine, especially for a guy who has such little high minors experience.
Yeah, and it, I guess what that kicked off in my brain is, at least theoretically, one thing from the minor leagues to the major leagues is that the strike zone is going to be roughly the same. So I did wonder, and there's other...
West is retiring.
Yeah. 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 And anybody who watches minor league baseball knows that the umps aren't as good, but still, theoretically, it's going to be roughly the same.
Yeah. I'm looking at the question on the screen right. If they don't come up very quickly, I think there should be some rioting.
Yeah.
Torkelson or we riot. I think that should be like the chant.
Yeah. There's no excuse, really. And we know that teams will mess with service time and stuff like that, but they're really...
You mean that extra week for Chris Bryant wasn't necessary? He wasn't as good as Mike Olt, and then he became better than Mike Olt that season. Are you suggesting that wasn't actually happened?
Yeah, I know. It's and it's one of those things where I don't necessarily blame teams for doing it, because they can, and because it's smart from their perspective. It just feels gross. But yeah, like, even if they do that, those guys are coming up a few weeks into the season, at most a few months into the season.
Yeah, they both had an over 900 OPS in AAA last year, not in full seasons, but they crushed AAA pitching. And I can't see them, unless they're actually struggling in like the first month of the season, changing that, because at that point, if they're just killing AAA pitchers, what are they going to learn at that point? yeah. like killing them a little more at that point, you have to say. And especially because the Tigers aren't going to win 95 games this year unless something very unexpected happens. Getting them time in the majors should be priority over squeezing out every last win by holding them down to see if they're ready yet. They got to be up quickly.
Absolutely.
And you flip over cars.
Yeah, you need, as you said, they're not going to be contending for the division, almost certainly not, but maybe the following year they could, and you want to get the guys up now and maybe get some of those growing pains out of the way so they're ready to go from Jump Street next year, but
yeah,
or the fall, you know, 2023.
Hit major league pitching, let them learn to deal with a slump or players adjusting, because that does happen, and you have to get used to that kind of thing. Get that stuff now taken care of, and then go after the White Sox in 2023.
Yeah. That sounds right to me. Let's see. We've got two more questions. Oh, here, we'll go with this one first. I would like to, this is from Steve Butts. He said, I would like to hear what all of you think Baez's future projection when you consider that his performance was disparate when comparing his performance with the Cubs and the Mets. He seems to me like it's volatile to look at his projection. Now, you actually wrote a whole paragraph about Baez in your
write-up. I think you just have to accept that he's not going to be a scientific hitter. That he's not going to be someone who is going to, he's not going to be an MVP candidate likely unless everything goes right for him. But he hits for a lot of power. He fills the position. And you just have to not worry that the contact at times will be almost comical, because that's who he is at this point. You have to, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Yeah. And we discussed it that there are certain types of players that just swing at everything. And they've demonstrated the ability to succeed in ways. A few have done it, like Baez, with such a stark, you know, strikeout walk rate, but he's done it several times, like for several seasons. Eventually it's going to stop working. But for now, if you've got a guy who puts up relatively consistent numbers at the end of the season, his rough start with the Cubs and his crazy finish with the Mets, that's probably to be expected for somebody like this who will go on big time streaks.
Not to mention too, he's just his athleticism. He's just a guy who still has, it's not like he's in his mid-30s or anything like that. Yeah, he still has the athletic ability to make up for his shortcomings. And so I think the projection that you have him here, Dan, I think it's spot on. So it would be nicer to hit him over closer to 300. But again, beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah, it goes back to what Earl Weaver said. He always used to say stuff about, don't focus on what a player can't do, focus on what a player can do. And so Earl Weaver was pretty advanced for the time, the way he used platoons and players. Like, he would get a lot out of a player like Terry Crowley that a lot of managers wouldn't, because he knew Terry Crowley couldn't play defense. He couldn't hit left-handed pitching. But as he said in that kind of foul-mouthed rant of Earl Weaver's, which you might have heard, that what Terry Crowley could do is sit in his on his ass for seven innings and throw him in the game in the eighth and get a hit off the right-handed reliever. That's what he did. Focus on what a player can do. And if you focus on what Baez can't do, then you're just going to be disappointed and you're going to miss out what he can do.
Yeah, and Zips, for people who haven't seen it, Zips has him hitting 26 home runs and batting 260, basically, which zero Tigers did last year or the year before.
Today, I have Tom Moore, Oriole broadcaster, back on the show. And I understand Tom can get into the mail with questions that supposedly I can answer. Now, what the fuck are some of these goddamn questions, Tom?
Well, first of all, Earl, George Moore from Baltimore is asking how much we feel the loss of...
John Stanhout was an asshole. He had us in trouble, had the fucking bases loaded, goddamn it, almost every fucking time he went out there. He liked to ruin my health smoking cigarettes, and thank God we got Timmy Stoddard coming in on the bullpen right now, sticking the bat up their ass. And that's what it takes.
Well, Bill Whitehouse, Earl, that certainly is an answer from Frederick Merrill. Wants to know why you and the Orioles don't go out and get some more teams.
Team speed, for Christ's sake. You get fucking goddamn little freeze on the fucking bases, getting picked off, trying to steal, getting thrown out, taking runs away from you. You get them big cocksuckers that can hit the fucking ball out of the ballpark, and you can't make any goddamn mistake.
Certainly, this show is going to get out in history, Earl. Terry Elliott of Washington, D.C., wants to know why you don't use Terry Crowley as a designated hitter all.
Terry Crowley's lucky he's in fucking baseball, for Christ's sake. Released by the Cincinnati Yankees, released by the fucking goddamn Atlanta Braves. We saw that Terry Crowley could sit on his fucking ass for eight innings and enjoy watching a baseball game just like any other fans, and has the ability to get up there and break one open in the fucking night. So if this cocksucker minds his own business and let me manage the fucking team, we'd be a lot better off.
Certainly, you've made your opinion known.
I don't remember the story behind that, but it wasn't an actual real radio show. It was
joking there, but that's kind of how Earl Weaver talks.
Speaking of Earl Weaver, that's our final question involves the Orioles.
Oh God.
It's Deadly Ninja Bees, our friend. He said the Orioles are moving their left field wall back. What changes to Comerica would you guys make to benefit the Tigers? Should they build the lineup around Comerica's dimensions?
I tend to think that teams should, it's not as much fun, but I think teams should try to keep their park as neutral as possible so that if your team can win there, it can win everywhere. I think if you're tailoring your park to your team, I think then maybe you just need a better team, because I think that's gimmicky and you're guaranteed not to win elsewhere, because teams that play in like weird parks tend to have trouble on the road sometimes, like the Rockies or the Twins when they had the baggy and the old Coliseum. I think it's more fun for the fans when parks are weird and unique. Like, it's fun to have, we have a flagpole. We have a giant man-eating plant that eats right fielders or something.
I would like that, yes.
Or the home run feature, which I guess wasn't part of the game, thank God. The Marlins, the Dolphins that go around just, well, but I digress. I think that you want to have it as neutral as possible so that your team, if your team can win there, then they can win anywhere.
And, you know, I second that too. And I know that Comerica Park, with they're talking about moving in right center. There's been rumors about that. Zach Short sitting on a podcast was talking about that. And I like Comerica Park the way it is. And I know people complain about the deep center field and what have you, but at the same time, that home run, that fly ball in center field will be a home run anywhere else. And really, that's definitely the case. Oh, the hill in San Diego, Walter brings up in the chat. It's a good one too. I'm sorry, what, Chris? Oh.
Castellanos isn't on the team anymore, so there's fewer no one to piss off about anymore.
The hill, I thought the hill was in Houston. Is there something in San Diego that I don't?
Aren't we talking about Towles Hill in Houston that they got rid of because
it's dangerous?
Yeah, I
like silly stuff like that though. But yeah, no,
we're not going to get hurt.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Yeah, I'm not worried about the moat full of crocodiles in the outfield. It's good fun. No, I'm with you, Relio. I don't have a problem with Comerica's dimensions, really. For as much as people complain about the lack of home runs or whatever, I think it's pretty much a neutral offensive environment overall. I think it usually plays like that because there's bigger gaps. And I don't even know, how would you tailor your team to that? I guess you'd have a bunch of speedy guys who could pull the ball over the fence. I don't know.
And the Tigers don't have any of that. That's a
I do have nothing. Like I said, I wouldn't change the dimensions. I do think every stadium at this point should have a retractable roof. I think we've got the technology. The time is now. It seems silly that there's ever a rainout to me, but
cities are hoping that owners aren't listening to you because then they're all going to be demanding that.
Like, okay, yeah.
Oh, now they need another new stadium.
Just retrofit one. This is giant umbrella. That's all they need. But the one thing I'm not crazy about at Comerica, and I do in general, I like stadiums that are crammed into smaller spaces because I do think you end up with a little bit more interesting designs. But I'm not crazy about like shrubbery / ivy in center field at Comerica. I know what they're trying for.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
It's nice and big and green and probably good for vision. But I'd rather see either seats out there or, I don't know, some handsome trees. Maybe put some trees out there that are like made like all the trees that baseball bats are made of.
Or
like an ash and a maple and a birch and a hickory or something like that.
All the urban gardens have been going up in Detroit in the last decade. They could put up some items from that because they have the GM fountain right there. So might as well maybe.
That fountain's no good.
Overrated.
Well, Chris, my cat just hit you on the screen.
I understand. It's probably related to the Tigers and is not happy about my.
He's ultra alert because I was playing a video. I was playing one of those 4K videos of like just birds.
Outside scenery.
So now he's like watching the monitor for movement like 24/7 now.
Maybe he thinks my hair looks like a rock hopper penguin.
But anyway, in the case of the Orioles, they are probably going to neutralize their park factors a bit by moving in the left or moving out the left field wall, because it is a good home run park for right-handed hitters. If you look at like, go to like the Fangraphs, look at the Fangraphs guts and see the park factors, it's always near the top for right-handed home run park factor. So it does make the park more neutral. And I tend to think that's probably the way that teams ought to go. Of course, you never know with the baseballs because they make it up as they go along because they're it's a wacky timeline where you do whatever.
Yeah, the baseball next year will be made of cat litter.
We're not going to tell anybody what we're going to do with the baseballs, but then we'll somehow randomly drop it during an interview. Like, it's no big deal. Like, anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure the Orioles fans are glad they're doing this after Gleyber Torres hit 65 home runs there a couple years ago.
We were talking CBA. I'd actually like if the players had some ball standards and who oversees that. I think equipment, because pitchers especially are very interested in how the ball is going to move and how the ball is going to feel. And I think that's a work environment thing to have the equipment change based on whim and whimsy.
Yeah, that's a good point. And weren't they experimenting with the pre-tacked balls in the Olympics and in the AFL?
Yeah, and also in AAA Toledo, the last thing
the stretch run.
The stretch run, they were using that tack ball.
Yeah, so that's a good point, Dan. It would be nice to have some uniformity, and if the players can push for that. Although if they push for that, maybe they have to give something up, a concession.
Yeah, okay. We're going to do the balls now. You have to make it 7 years to free agency now.
That's why somebody was pointing out, like, hey, we'll stop manipulating service time this way. They're just admitting they do it.
It was like in the last CBA where they got like a guaranteed like chef in the clubhouse, extra season tickets, and in return, signing pool bonuses for the minor leaguers.
Yeah.
And for the draftees. It's like, so you gave away millions of dollars and you could have just bought those extra tickets.
Yeah. And you're eating keto-free meals now that you have to pay for.
Yeah, you could have just DoorDash delivered something to the clubhouse every game, and that would have worked.
Yeah, some of these guys can hire personal chefs, and they do. So that's either way. But I think we're out of here. Thank you so much for listening. And Dan, thanks for coming by and talking music, talking Zips. And when's your next Zips projection dropping?
It is going to be dropping on Tuesday. We're actually off for MLK Day. And I don't know what team it is, but it's one of the four that hasn't gone yet, which is either the Brewers, the Braves, the Marlins, or what was the fourth team? I know I said, so one of those. See, I generate that by random number because I found out what happens that if I pick an order, then people will try to cajole me or convince me into changing and putting the team they want next. And to reduce the pressures, it's just random number. I have no authority over any of it.
Seems like a good way to do it to me.
And if you're watching us on YouTube, by the way, I'm sharing the RotoWear shirt again for Emily's Fight Edition. Again, Pitching Ninja did a really good job with this. So if you go and pre-order before the 23rd, I'll guarantee you a good size. So they have the big size for big dudes, and it's expected to ship around the end of the month. So also on our podcast notes, we're going to have the GoFundMe where you can go ahead and donate and help out Emily in her fight against cancer. So more on that. Hopefully we'll have Emily on soon or maybe next month or so. And based on her schedule, talk shop, but thoughts and prayers go out to her and her recovery. So for myself and Chris Brown, and we'll be back next week. We're going to have, Perry on next week, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And we have Joe Drake coming on the week after that for Prospects Live, as we're going to be talking some shopping. So some big guests as we continue to roll on through. And also, if you have podcast suggestion covers, by the way, we were doing Tribe Called Quest, Midnight Marauders for this episode. Next week, we're doing The Replacements. And the week after that, I still haven't figured that out yet. So if you have any suggestions for albums, for podcast covers, let us know. And we remake them in our own way. So until next time, have a good week, everybody.
Thanks again, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for having me.